This week, the woman who ruled Bangladesh for 15 years as Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina, was convicted in absentia of crimes against humanity and sentenced to death. The charges arose from the brutal crackdown against student protests in 2024. A UNHCR report estimated that as many as 1,400 people could have been killed in that crackdown. The protests led to Sheikh Hasina fleeing the country and an interim government led by Nobel laureate Muhammad Yunus taking over. Joining us to discuss the latest developments in Bangladesh is investigative journalist Zulkarnain Sayed Khan. Zulkarnain played a crucial role in the Al Jazeera investigation, All the Prime Minister's Men, which exposed corruption in Sheikh Hasina's administration. He also worked on the Secret Prisons of Dhaka report, which received a Global Investigative Journalism Network Award in 2023 and was called one of the bravest examples of Bangladeshi journalism. Zulkarnain also worked on the Al Jazeera report 36 Days in July, which revealed secret recordings of Sheikh Hasina during the student protests, which was critical evidence against her in the recent trial. Zulkarnain Sayed Khan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Zulkarnain, could you tell us about the Bangladesh International Crimes Tribunal, which was the body that tried Hasina, and tell us whether you think she got a fair trial?
Thank you, Julian. This is a very important discussion, and I'm glad to be a part of it. As you just say, that United Nations reports mentioned that around 1,400 people were killed during the mass uprising in Bangladesh back in August 2024. These people were murdered brutally. Thousands were injured. There are kids. Little kids as young as 6 years old were killed, murdered, like children of 10 years, 14 years, school-going kids were murdered by sniper rifle, by lethal weapons, which are meant to be engaged in war. This kind of weapons were used. So if you look at the evidences are very, very damning, actually. It is just out there. And the then chief of police of Bangladesh, Mr. Inspector General of Police, Abdullah Chaudhry Abdullah Al-Mamun, he became the state witness. And he also confirmed that who gave the orders, who instructed to take such decisive action, such harsh action to combat or to face the protesters.
Yes, he turned state evidence and I believe got a much more lenient sentence himself, 5 years.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So someone ordered this. And if you look at the hierarchy of the command structure in police or in the security forces, it is a home minister who has also been given the capital punishment. Also, Sheikh Hasina has a command responsibility. And we have identified multiple phone calls of her, which has been forensically analyzed and verified to be her own voice. And it was recorded by her own agency, National Telecommunications Monitoring Center, NTMC, which she formed to conduct surveillance on her political opponents. But what a turn of tables. Like it came to her and her own voice was recorded. So the International Crimes Tribunal that sentenced Hasina with the capital punishment, personally, I do not support capital punishment. I do not support the ultimate punishment to be hanged by death or by any lethal injection or electric chair. But this is the highest punishment that you can give in Bangladesh.
I suppose what I'm wondering, Zulkarnain, is although the evidence against Sheikh Hasina does appear to be quite compelling, at the same time, it also seems to be the case that there are serious concerns about the process which has led to this conviction and sentence.
I would say you're not wrong, because of course there are concerns, the way the court has been formed, the individuals involved with the sentencing, some of them might have political past, but end of the day, like the evidence is that are out there, the evidences that has been verified, evidences that has been very thoroughly verified by various international bodies are compelling and suggest that it was her who basically instructed such heinous acts. And it is not only the July uprising. If you go behind the 15 years of autocratic rule of Sheikh Hasina, you will see that more than 600 people were subject of enforced disappearances. They never returned back to their families. There are families that I am aware of who doesn't know what happened to their loved ones. For an example, Sajid al-Islam Shumon, he was an activist of Bangladesh Nationalist Party, BNP. There was one individual called Chaudhary Alam. He was a board commissioner of a small area. There is another ex-member of the parliament, Ilyas Ali. He was also abducted in the same way and never came home. And there are hundreds of examples like this. There are a number of extrajudicial killings that happened using the security forces. So also, as we mentioned earlier during the opening, that our report, secret prisoners of Dhaka, where we identify people were kept without any trial inside secret detention cells in the intelligence agency's headquarters. So all this does suggest that Sheikh Hasina conducted an authoritarian regime in the most brutal possible manner. And what has happened, it was all hard doing, sadly.
So Kanan, you've made clear your personal position on the death penalty. What do you see as the political and, I suppose, diplomatic or legal ramifications of this death sentence against Sheikh Hasina?
Diplomatic situation, diplomatic concern that is there, Bangladesh and India are two very close neighboring countries. And India is now giving safe passage to Sheikh Hasina. She's there. She's living in peace, with enjoying all the state amenities. And India, on the other hand, are not really cooperating with Bangladesh to return her or to stop her anywhere from giving her statements.
Yes, I understand that there is an extradition treaty between India and Bangladesh, but there's an exception for what are described as offences of a political character. And it does seem that the Indian government is maintaining its stance of basically allowing Sheikh Hasina to stay in India and resist any attempts to extradite her.
Yeah, and it's not only the Sheikh Hasina, like there are hundreds of Awami League MPs, Member of Parliament, and activists are all living in India. India is giving them all the support, knowing fully well that these people are involved in serious crimes like money laundering. Sizable amount of funds have been siphoned off from Bangladesh during the last 15 years. So I think good sense should prevail, and they should express the good gesture that any neighboring country should do during such crisis and cooperate with the Bangladeshi authorities.
That does seem unlikely though, doesn't it?
Well, if we would like to live in peace side by side or have a harmonious relationship, I don't see an alternative to that.
What has the response of the interim government led by Mohamed Yunus been to the conviction?
So far, the interim government had Mohamed Yunus. He did express his support, or he did confirm that he is supportive of this sentence. And other agencies or other apparatus of the government, like other advisors, they were all very positive about it. That's what I have noticed. But again, what we mentioned in the beginning, that such trial in absentia does raise concern. And Amnesty did raise their concern. Human Rights Watch did raise their concern. So, of course, they're not in favor of the capital punishment, which is a death sentence. And they are asking to review the sentencing.
Do you think one of the purposes of the death sentence was to ensure that Sheikh Hasina would not return to Bangladesh?
I don't think, because this is the capital punishment that you can avert to someone who is involved in murder and who instigates or who orders certain kind of killings. So this is the country's standard sentencing process. Like if someone is found to be guilty of committing murder or ordering murder, then this is a standard sentence that is given in Bangladesh.
What's your assessment of the performance of Mohamed Yunus's interim government in the short time that it's been in power, Zulkarnain?
Julian, that's a very difficult question for me, actually. to be fair, I would say they could have delivered better. They could have delivered much better. But again, it's a short, in a very short span of time, they did bring some changes, some important changes to country's judicial system, to country's the way the police as an organization works. But still, there is a lot of room for the police to develop. And they did bring some changes into certain policy matters in related to education, in related to women empowerment. So those things are there, certain achievements are certainly there. But again, they have taken decisions which I personally feel, and I'm sure many will agree, that which were not really their mandate, and they should not have interfered into things like constitution, reforming constitution, things like delaying the election for such a long time. You know, like we have witnessed, and at the similar period, we have seen that in Nepal there was an uprising, and the prime minister who has taken charge announced election within 6 months' time or 3 months' time. So Bangladesh could have done the same, actually. The Yunus could have done the same, considering the country is, at this moment, is in a very volatile situation. The law enforcement agencies are literally struggling to maintain the security situation clear. There are certain unrests in the labor industry. Many factories went bust, some were shut down. So there are crises emerging, and conducting a free and fair election is probably the most ideal way at this moment, the only choice that we have. And we do have a planned election to be held in February 2026. And I only hope and pray that we can successfully conduct it, the government can successfully conduct it.
Yes. So as you say, that election for February 2026 will be, what, about 20 months after the change of government. Who will be participating and running for office in that election, Zulkarnain?
As far as I'm concerned, so far it seems like Bangladesh Nationalist Party, BNP, Bangladesh Jamaat Islami, they will also contest in the election, the newly formed party, National NCP. NCP will also participate. There are some other parties like Gona Adhikar and some other small parties are also there. They're all going to participate.
But the Awami League is not allowed to participate, is that right?
Awami League's activities in Bangladesh has been barred legally, and their political activities are not permitted for the time being. So I think they are not going to participate in the election.
Is there a new party which it's expected that Awami League followers will back, or is it more likely that followers of the Awami League will effectively boycott the election?
Well, a follower of the Awami League are not really allowed to take part in the election, but Awami League as a party, you know, like which was formed is around more than 70 years back. Like it's a very old political party, so there are some strong supporters. They do have a strong supporter base in the country, and it would have been wise if the government considered the voter bank, because I can tell you that at least Awami League does still have at least 15-20% voter bank, like fixed voter bank. So by not allowing Awami League to take part in the election, you are kind of depriving these 15-20% voters. I do not think in a proper democratic situation such a thing should happen or should be allowed to happen. But again, I am just a journalist. I cannot comment any further on that.
A journalist and a diplomat by the sounds. Is Mohamed Yunus going to run in the next election?
I do not think so, no. No, he's not going to run in the next election.
And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about what other cases are before the International Crimes Tribunal in Bangladesh?
There are a few other cases. For an example, there is a case of a major general who used to be the head of Rapid Action Battalion, the infamous Death Squad of Bangladesh. He used to be the intelligence chief of that agency. And it has been alleged that he has conducted 1,130 murders by himself. So 1,130 extrajudicial killings. And there are witnesses who were his aides who witnessed this kind of this brutality. And it is unbelievable what he has done. And if it's established that he has done this, probably it will change the history of serial killers in the world. Because it is unheard of that someone single-handedly killed 1,100 people.
And just finally, Zulkarnain, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the personal consequences that you and other journalists that you've worked with have faced because of the reporting that you've done about Sheikh Hasina and the Awami League's government.
There are many, like my ancestral house was vandalized in 2022 after my report. 2021, actually, after my report, All the Prime Minister's Man was aired. Later on, there was an OCC RP report that I did on a Bangladeshi MP who amassed $4 million worth of home, who like invested in the New York City. And just after the report was published, my younger brother, my only brother who lives in Bangladesh, was beaten very brutally. And till now, like, those people involved were not brought under justice, like, they've not been tried. Other journalists, I can tell you, at least two people, like one was Rosina. Journalist Rosina used to work with the Pratham Alo. And during the corona period, she was collecting information that was that suggested the corruption inside the Ministry of Health. And she was arrested. She was beaten by the cops and then later taken to custody. There are journalists who lost their lives for doing the right kind of thing, for revealing truth. There is a journalist called Kajol. Kajol was abducted and kept in a secret detention cell for nearly 40 days. My very good friend, writer Mushtaq Ahmed, and cartoonist Ahmed Kabir Kishore, we were publishing cartoons, and we only published a cartoon criticizing the government's action during the corona period. And as a consequence to that, Mushtaq Ahmed and Kishore, since they're in Bangladesh, they were picked up from their residences, beaten brutally. Mushtaq was not allowed any bail from the jail, and he succumbed to his death inside jail after languishing for nearly 7 months, 8 months. So these are very personal experiences, things that I have very closely witnessed. So you can imagine what were the broader situation that time.
Would it be safe for you to return to Bangladesh now, Zulkarnain?
I do not think so. You know, like people in Bangladesh, like it is not very, Bangladesh is not really a very safe country. And right now it is not safe at all. And I have already made very sizable enemies, very wealthy enemies, very powerful enemies. You know, I still get death threats. Even living in the UK, my last report was Minister's Million, where a Bangladeshi minister purchased around 1,000 properties across the world. In Dubai, in UK, in Singapore, Malaysia. So after our report with Al Jazeera, like the Minister's Million, around 270 properties of this guy was confiscated by the NCA, National Crime Agency of UK. I received two phone calls, and they were saying that I should watch my steps. It might be my last day on earth living in the UK. So I do not know who are those people. So, you know, this is how it is.
Well, we very much appreciate you speaking with us today on Sunday Extra. Zulkarnain Sayed Khan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Julian. Thank you.
We're speaking there with investigative journalist Zulkarnain Sayar Khan, who is joining us from Kuala Lumpur, where he's attending the Global Investigative Journalism Conference. And if you'd like to find out more about the fall of Sheikh Hasina, it's well worth watching the report produced by an Al Jazeera team, including Zulkarnain, 36 Days in July. It covers in detail the student protests of 2024, the brutal response of Sheikh Hasina's government that ultimately led to the fall of Sheikh Hasina's government and her fleeing the country, taking exile in India.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.